Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. I'm Willem Vanderhorst, your host for the show. I have been working on editing some of my backlog, because, yes, I have some backlog. As in, I published a couple of weeks ago my recording of playing the letter-writing role-playing game Quill. And so we're early 2020, and before Christmas, I also went out and recorded myself to the Louvre. So I'm experimenting with a couple of new episode formats. As I've explained before, if you listen to the podcast before, I'm definitely going to be recording myself and hopefully with other people playing games. I've also just recorded an episode with the author of Quill, the game that I published in my last episode. And I wanted to use my recorder and go do something a little bit different. And I should be publishing my first episode in French along the same lines very soon. So if you follow both languages, that's going to be, might be of interest to you. But in any case, it might be of interest to you if you wanted to visit the Louvre or see it through the eyes of somebody else. I am experimenting with what a playful visit to a museum might be and what is a playful visit to the most visited museum in the world, the Louvre in Paris. As you might know, if you visit, if you follow my podcast and if you follow what's going on with me in general, I moved to Paris now 5 months ago. Like, just, it goes very fast. I mean, just as I was hoping I would publish this before Christmas and Christmas vacation happened, et cetera, et cetera. And then I went into like a lot more work and editing because this is my live recorder. So there's live noises and environment. More stuff to take out, or at least I took on the work of removing a lot of the noises, not everything, but quite a lot of it. Anyway, that took a lot longer to edit because I'm doing it myself. And yeah, so I moved to Paris. And I, even though I grew up here, I never really properly visited the Louvre. And I talk a little bit more about that in the episode, so I'll let myself talk about it later while I'm over there. And this is new, so it's completely silly. As I said, visited as a newbie, not trying to be knowledgeable and observing and commenting on whatever I noticed. And it's in some cases ludicrous. Like, I have seemed to have a fascination with how naked some of the figures in paintings and struck sculptures are. And I'm not the only one, because a lot of visitors are playing and commenting or seem to be doing that while I was looking at other people. Some of the things I was questioning was whether I was going to take the Louvre card, the card for 2020. So I got it. I just got it a few days ago. So I'm going to be able to visit a few more times. I don't know if I'm going to record again. But that said, if you enjoyed the episode, I'd love to hear back from you. And please post a review or a comment or a tweet. You can obviously give me a 5-star review. That would be amazing, a 5-star review. And certainly tell me if you don't like it, or send me an email if you don't, or if you enjoy or don't enjoy this episode. I laughed listening to myself and how silly it is at sometimes. So I hope you enjoy it too for that point. And I give some extra commentary after the fact thoughts on like, what is a playful visit to a museum that for many people is an entertainment time. I mean, they do this on their time, own time and leisure. What else? There's some point I noticed on the play and more specifically video game and or entertainment side of things that I noticed that people have this Nintendo 3DS handheld console, gaming console audio guide. And I checked and it is an official partnership that Nintendo has with the Louvre Museum since 2012. At the time, those were brand new 3DS consoles, and Nintendo helped the Louvre Museum build those audio guides that show on both screens exactly where you are. But I comment on that inside of the episode. But yeah, I thought it was fascinating that they have an official partnership with Nintendo that helped them mod the Nintendo 3DS to be a really great audio guide, showing at the same time on the top screen what you're looking at and on the bottom screen where you are in the museum, and with over 700 commentary from a lot of different pieces of art and different guys within the museum. So I might do that next time I go. I'll check it out. And what else is happening? So I am also getting back into gear, organizing business meetings and talking to potential clients in the beginning of the year. Things are getting back into, you know, more active work mode for me and for Paris in general. And the strikes are abetting. They're not over yet. Certainly not far from over. And there's a lot of news press coverage about that. But at least the metro, most of the metros and trains in Paris are borderline almost, when they're operational during the whole day, not entirely 100%, but it gets workable. And a lot of the business and coffee meets and things like that that were scheduled just before Christmas. I'm back at rescheduling again. And I have a few more episodes coming out for the podcast, a few more things I'm working on. So yeah, just watch the space. There's going to be more coming up. And if you have any questions, just don't hesitate. So you can get in touch with me on Twitter. That's at icvillem, letters I and C-W-I-L-L-E-M. And via my website, icecreamforeveryone.net. And my email is villem, W-I-L-L-E-M, at icecreamforeveryone.net. That's if you have any questions about Playful Strategy, if you have any questions about the kind of brand workshop and or innovation workshops I organize for clients, or if you have any questions for any type of project that you have going on, or if you'd like to play a game with me and be on the podcast and talk about what you do for a living at the same time that we play a game together, which can definitely happen online as well as in person in Paris. So yeah, thank you very much. And here's me visiting the Louvre. So this is interesting. I've been in the museum all of like, I don't know, 5 to 10 minutes. I'm doing this as a complete dilettante, by the way. I just looked up where the best place to get into the museum is. In case you're listening to this and you're planning a visit to the Louvre and you've never been, it's worth looking up how to get in, buy a ticket online. Basically, the story is since this year, 2019, you have to buy a ticket online. And you can buy a ticket not online. You can buy it straight here. Well, that's a very bad idea because you're likely to be spending several hours queuing outside. So depending on the time of year, well, you don't want to be queuing for 2 to 4 hours outside, presumably. That's one of the reasons I've never actually been in here, aside from just under the pyramid. So it's quite something to be here for the first time. And I found this super random room. Like, count on me to find the very interesting nondescript. So yeah, I'm doing this as a complete dilettante. I just walked in and I don't even have a map with me. I'm wandering around. I'm planning to get the card. I think I'm going to get the card for 2020. So that I can come back several times so I don't have to feel rushed and I can actually look into what I'm looking at next time. This time I'm just going to wander around, record a little bit. And there was this, so I was in the middle of European sculptures. So on the underground of the Danone Wing, you know, this place is gigantic, right? And there's this spiral staircase. And I thought, that's interesting. I should just walk up. There's another dude in front of me. And the top of the staircase leads to this little alcove where I'm sitting on a little bench and everything else is closed. And it just says this room 402. And there's one sculpture. No, two sculptures, sorry. And I can look out outside and I have a view on a corridor that leads out to the square of the Louvre where I can see some traffic. And obviously everything's echoing, I think. But I think it's because there's some renovation works on the other side of this. So the wing is cut off at the moment. So it makes it that there's this just weird dead end. This room that's like, it's my little throne right now. My recording alcove at the moment. And it's just grandiose. I have this gigantic, huge ceilinged alcove to myself until the next soul just courageously or bravely walks up the stairs not knowing exactly what's going on there. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this visit. It's going to be cool. I'm finding really interesting little nooks and crannies to this whole museum experience. And I'm recording, I'm trying to find the right way to pull out and put back in my backpack the my Zoom recorder, which I barely used about a couple of years ago to be like, you know, professional. I mean, good quality recording at least. So I'm finally using it. I'm just looking at people. I just went through the Italian Renaissance Michelangelo gallery, looking at the beautiful weather outside, looking at the amount of people queuing to get in the pyramid, looking at groups of people for whom, I don't know, it's just interesting to start to look at the different ways in which people are visiting. And as I like kind of the nooks and crannies, the behind the scenes, I'm also looking at, I guess that's the playful way as well. I'll come back to the playful. I'll probably comment later once I have time to think about it. But on the spot, the windows are giving on this wing that is being renovated, as I mentioned in my last section. So there's construction workers right behind all the sculptures, and there's construction work going on. And it's just the contrast between different ways in which people are visiting, what's going on, what people are reacting to, different groups just like, you know, making fun of this penises and genitals and sculptures, which is interesting. There's like those scenes from Gods. I'm wondering why are all those gods naked? There's Hercules hunting or Adonis hunting. I can't help but wonder why. I mean, I guess they wanted to portray the perfect form of like the superhuman form, god form of human beings, but at the same time portraying them in those scenes where they're hunting or doing all sorts of activities that doesn't seem to be very sensible to be naked in, which is kind of funny. I don't know if this is what the first reason for visiting an art museum to comment on those kinds of things, but yeah, it's just the first things that come to mind. I saw a couple of statues of Mercury that I really, really liked. The messenger god, which is interesting, being communications, working communication. It's also interesting that those types of gods tend to be the mischievous ones, tricky tricksters, etc. I'll come back to that.
Well, just like in the previous episode I published when I was playing Quill, I am listening and commenting on my own recording, so it's pretty meta. And I thought I would add a few words about this idea of playful visiting a museum. What is a playful experience? And I went back to, and I do say more about this in the actual recording, but given this is just a few minutes in, I thought it'd be valuable to share a little bit more about what I have in mind at the moment with the references I have. And this is something that I'm going to keep studying during the year in the conversations that I have, and I want to do a little bit more formal studies. So in one of the main books that I've read about games and play and men is from the, and I've mentioned him before, the sociologist Roger Caillois, and I have the book in French, so I'm kind of like half taking some of the translations from Wikipedia, to be honest, and half translating straight from the book. But he classifies different types of games. And so I'm going to be playing games in the upcoming episodes and the previous episode I published. I'm also going to have conversations. So for example, just for reference, I last published myself playing a role-playing game called Quill, a letter-writing game for a single player. And yesterday I just recorded a conversation with the author of the game. So I'll be publishing that soon. So that's playing a game, and I'm going to have more of those kinds of episodes. Here, obviously, I'm visiting a museum, so it's completely different from playing a game. But what do I mean, and what am I talking about by a playful experience of the museum? And in his book, Roger, like I know him, Roger Caillois talks about two main categories of play. He distinguishes different style. This is not by any means the only definition, and it's something I've talked about before in a few different blog posts, but maybe you don't know that. So he talks about, on one side, six core characteristics of what constitutes play. So play is free, it's not obligatory, that's one. It's separate from the routine of life, and it occupies its own time and space. So it's uncertain, so that the results of play cannot be predetermined, and so the player's initiative is involved. It is unproductive in that it creates no wealth and it ends as it begins. So there's like, there's a specific time and place that it happens, but it's not the same as being productive for work or making food to sustain yourself, even though I think that you can add play to those activities too, but that's a different conversation. It's governed by rules that suspend ordinary laws and behaviors that must be followed by players. This is more to the case of a game. It involves make-believe that confirms for players the existence of imagined realities that may be set against real life. And then there's like different types of play. And those are, and this is the one that's, there's different categories of games. We're not going to go into those ones so much because I don't think those belong to the museum visit that I'm talking about, that I'm sharing here. But there's two types of play that he puts on some kind of spectrum, from ludus to what he calls paideia. And paideia is a translation that I'm not sure where it comes from, of a name of a child. And the way he describes it and the way he defines it is the paideia is the more spontaneous manifestations of playful instinct. A cat playing with a ball of thread, or a dog playing around with a ball, or like a baby laughing at some
object or toy he's playing with. So he's talking about those as like first identifiable example of those kinds of activities. So it's very unstructured. He talks about a happy exuberance that translates in immediate and disordinate agitation. It's interesting because he's talking about quite noisy recreation, like something that's relaxed, might be excessive, but it's recreational and not structured. So playing around or doodling, he puts in that category. There is that spectrum when you visit a museum. It is a leisure activity, but you could be doing it purely for formal reasons. I think it exists on a spectrum. I mean, there's got to be, well, there doesn't have to be, but I think there is for people, even if they're seriously studying, some measure of enjoyment, or they can be anyway. And then there's people visiting it to various degrees of complete leisure and doing it from a playful perspective. And when you look at that that way, it does match the six core characteristics that we're talking about. It's not obligatory. Most people, you know, go to the museum. They don't like, they're not obligated to go. And you can be, but, you know, or at least I wasn't. Separate from the routine of life, that is actually one of the main reasons I went to the museum. I wanted something that was different from my routine of life and have a different kind of experience. Uncertain, I went in not knowing exactly what I was going to be learning, and I went in with an open mind to be, you know, experiencing and observing whatever I did. Unproductive, arguably it did not immediately contribute to my, you know, sustenance, making money, etc. I think that it was indirectly participating. I mean, I'm recording this podcast, you could say, and it is, I mean, it's myself. I mean, I'm expressing myself in the podcast, and it is indirectly contributing to my developing a reputation and developing and honing my own mind and studying what I want to be studying for my work in terms of like, what am I learning from this so that I can be applying to future playful strategy workshops or developing exercises to help a brand develop what their values are, to help a company look into new novel ways to communicate or new products and services like that. It's governed by rules that suspend ordinary laws and behaviors that must be followed by players. Well, this is pretty unstructured, as I was talking about earlier, so there's not tons of rules in the way that I visited the museum at all. But there were a few, you know, guidelines, not strict ones, but certainly I said, and I just said like a couple of minutes ago, if you're listening to this, that I would be visiting this as a dilettante, as in I was going to be enjoying whatever I observed without any firm intention of looking, of studying one side of the museum in particular. So that's governed by rules in some ways. Involves some make-believes. Ish. I mean, there is not a massive amount of make-believe, certainly not as much as some role-playing games. This is something that we can come back to in role-playing games or other types of games where there's more make-believe than this. But there's a little bit. I mean, you're out of your normal life, and I think that's that's correlated to the separate routine of life characteristic of play. So all that to say that I think that being playful and participating in an activity that is a leisure activity and looking at it from an unstructured play perspective can give you a different way of looking at things, leading to new ideas, new connections being made. So I'm walking down the huge, ridiculously long Denon main wing. So there's two main wings. There's the south is... Yeah, I'm south, yes. South is Denon, like closer to the river, closer to the Seine. And Richelieu is the other side, north, Pigeon, pretty much. North and south. And it's just, I think it's a fairly low affluence day because of the strikes, because it's midweek. It's just the week before Christmas. Of course, there's still a lot of people coming from all around the world. So I'm just wandering around. As I said, I'm like really doing this as a dilettante. I'm not trying to see anything in particular. I'm just browsing the museum, really, and seeing whatever I notice. And right now, the main thing I'm noticing is like these really long corridors of paintings that there's little to no really famous exhibits in this very long corridor, very long hallway. All the painters are famous, probably, to an art person.
but for the vast majority, people seem to be browsing and walking through. And I was just wondering, well, we're looking at all those paintings of scenes from antiquity, from different eras. This is, we're not in medieval, I think Renaissance. I'll have to double check the dates. I think like 16th, 18th century paintings of European painters, mostly, I think. I'll double check the contents exactly. But anyway, the main thought was, are we going to be looking at reproductions or prints or virtual reality environment museums of famous Instagrammers of today? Are the 100 best TikTok videos going to survive? By the way, I haven't really looked at like those. We're starting to see some, you know, best videos of 2019, best Instagram stories, best TikTok videos. If you don't know what TikTok is, it's musically reborn. It's like short video clips of people, I think, singing. I'm still bad at that. I feel old. I turned 40 this year, so that's my excuse. And we used to have Vine doing almost, if not exactly, the same thing. Do we still look at the famous Vine stuff, or is that already lost in the amount, a ridiculously enormous amount of noise that we're creating every day? And how are we going to keep what is, what we believe is worth keeping? Are people curating this stuff for future museums? I don't know. That's just like the musings of me at the museum at the moment. I wonder also, is this the same as, you know, if I covered all the walls of my house, assuming I had a big enough house, let's say a house in the States, with photos of all my vacation, and then every time a friend would come around for drinks or dinner, I would really just give them a full-on tour of every single story of what happened. I'm assuming you need different authors to make it a museum feel. I mean, the idea being, is this the same thing as like showing a picture night of all my vacation to somebody? It's like they're bored to death, like hearing other people's experiences. And it's impossible. You can't hold off. I mean, you can't hold on so much attention to everything going on. People just wander. They pay attention to a few things, and I do the same. You can't really pay attention to everything. There's just ridiculous amounts of it. I guess that's why you're told to, you know, this is the famous one. Go see the Mona Lisa. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm just going down this wing because, and then I'm just going to wander on the other side. I'll stop by Mona Lisa, of course. I'm curious to see how crowded it's going to be. So yeah, pictures of vacation. It's just like, is there a combination, is there a comparison or analogy to be made with a museum and exactly what we're doing in it and why we assume this is a very important, I mean, it's a hallmark and repository of our culture, of different cultures. But sometimes you look at the sculptures, I was looking at the sculptures downstairs and just like, there's a sculpted door that comes from Valencia in Spain. And it's like, who decided to just take it? Doesn't it belong on the building it used to be on? That building, does it exist anymore? Go figure. But it's not, I mean, it's a European culture. It's like all the big museums are like that. There's just like stuff that is pillaged from all different parts of the world. And then we say it's our culture. I guess it is ours as human beings. Is it national culture anymore? I mean, maybe there's more French paintings and sculptures than any other here, but I'm not sure. I think it's more of a colonialist. I mean, maybe colonialist. I'm not entirely sure. A lot of musings today, or at least for now. Maybe I'll have different kinds of tones of stuff. Maybe it's because I'm watching this gigantic picture of what I'm assuming is Jesus preaching people. There's angels on top. I'll go check. I think this is Jesus preaching at the prime of his life, I'm guessing. Looks to be religious enough anyway. Okay, so I'm in the same room I was just recording in a second ago, and I have to get past the embarrassment that I'm speaking to a microphone that is pretty big. I mean, it's a big microphone. It's pretty obvious. That said, there's a lot of people with phones, and there's a lot of people with headphones listening to audio guides. So, I mean, I guess I'm not the only one looking kind of silly. So I'm in room 718, the Brooklyn room, let's call it. I think 718 is Brooklyn area code. The first thing that I noticed in this big room walking in is that the painting on the ceiling is falling off. It's like just curdling. I don't know if curdling is the right word for paint. I don't think so. And the painting I was just referring to as thinking it was Jesus is not Jesus at all. It's the Virgin Assumption.
by Orso in Venetian Giambattista Piazzetta. Okay, by the way, listening to this, you're going to assume I'm a complete ignoramus when it comes to art and museums. I've been to a lot of museums, and I studied art in university, but it is honestly far away, and I was never an extreme close-up student. I mean, I remember some of my classes on aesthetics and composition of painting, because that was attributed to both painting and cinema, and some of my classes in design, but really, it is far, a long time ago. All right, so what do we say about... The painting is made in Venice, and this is from 1735, so we're in 18th century. So yeah, it seems to be 16th to 18th century, which is what I was saying earlier. And it was painting for high altar of a church. An episode of the life of the Virgin carried to the heaven by angels after her death. Okay, cool. So the dude speaking kind of looks like a Jesus, but he's not. But anyway... The thing that I thought really like, and when I was interestingly talking about, is this the same as looking at people's photos? Some of them are, and I find them actually more interesting. There's two really big paintings to the other side by Giovanni Paolo Panini, 17th century again, Rome. So galleries of modern Rome, views of modern Rome, and this is, and it's a gallery, it's architectural, so one thing I really like, architectural painting, and it's the scene of this people living there. They seem to be probably very rich nobles, and so I mean, I'd be curious to see if this is a correct depiction or a fantasy fiction depiction, but anyway, there's a dude that's being surrounded by his court, seems like, and beautiful interior, similar kind of palace to where I am standing now. With paintings everywhere, like floor-to-ceiling paintings. And the paintings are of what we would take as photos, because they're landscapes and buildings and areas. And interestingly, I don't think any of them, aside from the ceiling paintings that are not mounted pieces, de tableau, I'm having trouble like mixing my French and English. You know, it's integrated into the ceiling. That seems to be kind of religious. But the rest of it is vacation photos. Yeah, it's like, I mean, vacation paintings. It's like people hanging out by a fountain, people hanging out in the middle of a square, and the architecture of it. So it's meta-architecture kind of painting, because there's architecture within architecture. And you have this sad-looking lion in the front. There's sculptures and people writing and... doing their business with this very rich and famous noble aristocrat in the middle, or king, prince, go figure. I really like that. This is kind of cool. I'm impressed by the amount of paintings, floor to ceiling, everywhere in this fantastic palace. There's not so much for minimalism. There's also like paintings hanging in top of and in front of other paintings on columns. So I don't know if they're always hanging out there, if he's picking them. I'm reading a lot into this one. And there's two. I mean, there's another one with the person in the middle seems to be having a more of a religious kind of stand to them. They have very, very large books. I don't know if that was a thing or not. Yeah. Interesting. So, yeah, I mean, obviously this is like the 1%. It's not the poor people toiling in the fields, obviously. So another Panini. Yeah, galleries of views from antique Rome. Oh, so they were antichrome. So they're probably a little bit fictional, because they're not galleries of what was going on in 17th century. But they don't look like they're dressed in antique clothing at all. So I don't know about the one. But I really like that. Just definitely attracted my eye. I like that kind of thing. So I'm just in a side room. I was going all the way to the lion door, La Porte de Lyon. La Porte de Lyon is one of the side entrances to the museum. So if you ever come in on a day of high affluence, it is definitely a fantastic way to get in with nobody queuing, except that from time to time it's closed and they don't really necessarily announce it. At the moment, because of the strikes and the museum is opening a little later, some of the rooms are closed and the lion door is closed at the moment. So I tried to get in through here, but then went through the Richelieu door, which also doesn't really have any queue. There's literally no queue at all to get in. And I had my ticket in advance. So those are things worth knowing. And I'm still, as I said, I really like the behind the scenes, the small little stuff. And there's tons of that in the Louvre. there's areas where by the time I get to the Mona Lisa, I'm sure it's going to be absolutely packed and there's a lot of people down in the corridors. But here I'm in right next to the room I was in, 718. This is room 734. Tiny little alcove. It's like a little nook. I'm sat down. There's nobody around. There's a few little... The room is specialized in Greek and Russian religious icons. And for whatever reason, there's this beam that makes it low-ceilinged on one side of the room that kind of makes it very cozy and weird. So I'm back in the very long Dinan gallery, again feeling a little bit self-conscious about the fact that I'm holding a mic and talking around, but it's a little bit quieter. It's lunchtime, I guess. That might be why. And I'm just having thoughts bubble that I thought were worth recording, at least to come back to and maybe have some more thoughts about. So... one is not surprising at all, but there's obviously a lot of people with phones, taking photos with their phones, myself included. Very few people with cameras. I saw two people with cameras so far. And there's one painting that caught my eye on the way over and on the way back, because I'm walking back to the same gallery twice. And this is Domenico Zampieri di Le Dominicain. I think he's famous, the Dominican. I don't know. I'll have to look. Anyway, it's a landscape with the Jews fleeing Egypt, presumably. I mean, it says flight from Egypt, 17th century. It's a beautiful landscape. I was surprised. I thought it was just like a landscape of a village somewhere in Europe, Tuscany. And then I started looking with a critical eye on just a different eye, all the other paintings, and thinking, well, it doesn't look like it's fleeing until you tell me. Also, the painting is big but high, so there's reflection, so I couldn't see the people the first time round. And it looks like a, Western European landscape. It doesn't look like Egypt at all. So I'm just noticing how much each one of the paintings have their own spin on it. Even scenes from the Bible have the spin from the origin of the painter, of course, the style, the time. I mean, there's a lot of different stuff on it, on each one of the periods where those stories are depicted that are brought back to the styles of the painter themselves, whether they're from Spain, whether it's 16th or 17th century, whether they're using different styles of painting that I wouldn't be able to talk about knowledgeably right now. I might look into it and add a little bit more information about those points, because I'm taking notes about the paintings themselves. So that's interesting, and also makes me think, the fakes haven't started now, that we've been doing artistic reinterpretation of everything. Now the thing that seems to be scary at the time we're in now, or at least to me, maybe because I'm old, I don't know, talking about things like having listened to a podcast about deep fakes recently, and looking at videos of deep fakes and audio of deep fakes. Deepfakes, in case you don't know, is like the ability of these programs that have been created to be able to reproduce the voice or the image of a person speaking and giving them the ability to say or do other things that they've never said or did, particularly for famous people, like, making a politician say some things that he's never said before, or she. And we've been reinterpreting the past for all of our existence, right? As a species, artistically reinterpreting. Just like I walk by this painting quite casually and think, oh, it's like a landscape from somewhere, I don't know, in Tuscany or something. And then you look closer and you're like, oh, no, actually, it's the Jews fleeing Egypt. Okay, that didn't look like that at all. And then there's another one a little bit further that I noticed of David with Goliath's head. And David is depicted with a really very fancy hat with a feather in it. And I'm like, well, I don't think, the scene from the Bible had that kind of style and fashion at the time. But so that's an interesting thought. I might pick up on it and develop it or not. And then the other one that I'm thinking, oh, there's a lot more people. There's like, of course, people come by waves in museums. So just going to walk down this corridor. Again, self-conscious because there's a lot of different languages that are being spoken. I don't know how this recording is going to sound. I know the recorder is good, so it should be fine. We'll see. So thinking about play. People go to the museum for leisure. They're on vacation, most of them visiting here, or they have a day off. And they're taking leisure time. I'm taking leisure time. It's a very serious activity. From a lot of people. There's people looking at their phones. Fortunately, people are chatting and laughing and looking at the funny or ridiculous or whatever absurd or go figure humorous side of the paintings that they're looking at. And I'm curious, and this is a note for myself to look at, like the form of play that is being explored when people are visiting a museum for leisure time, whereas some other people are going to be bored out of their minds from looking at this, and some of them are going to be visiting in after a while just thinking this is something I should be doing. So I don't know, but there is play in there. So there's certainly an exploration, certainly a discovery, and it's going to be different for a lot of different people at the same time, but I'm interested what is being communicated, or what is being experienced, rather. And then the last thought, I am interested in looking at from a communications perspective. I went to this event once, I might have talked about it, on branding for museums and the design of a museum, like curation of a museum, the visits, where do you put what kind of art? Given you have this building and you're like, all right, you have this gigantic palace, throw up all the stuff on the wall and figure out the best way to organize it. That's an extremely interesting proposition. I'm fascinated by both how do you go through visiting public spaces, how do you organize flows of people, where do you decide to put your most famous exhibits. And that's why the reason why you liked playing games like SimCity, as well as Roller Coaster Tycoon to create a theme park, or I think there was a Zoo Tycoon in the same area. There must be a museum simulator as well. I don't think I've played a video game like that, but anyway, that's something to look at for later. Quick commentary note on the idea of a museum tycoon SimCity-style video game. I'm not sure there was one existing before, but it turns out that there is one currently in development that they recently announced. I saw a few videos. There was a teaser trailer on YouTube called Mondo Museum, and there's a few commentary videos on the idea of the museum tycoon. So I'm not sure it existed before, but there's one that's upcoming that's going to be available on the gaming platform Steam, apparently developed by a small games development studio in Canada. So there you go. For anybody interested in creating their own museum in virtual video game form, it's coming up. I just saw the Mona Lisa and went to the most crowded room, so far. I mean, it's presumably the most crowded room in the museum, which kind of makes sense because it's the Mona Lisa. I kind of feel bad for all the other paintings in that room, regardless of whatever they are. They're not going to get as much attention as the Mona Lisa. So there was one thing that I had a thought about earlier and I hadn't recorded, and this is just like something just happened that was perfect. It has nothing to do with Mona Lisa, but it has to do with play and it has to do with people being silly. I was thinking earlier, I remember seeing in the news this controversy, I think in the States and elsewhere, about pictures of women breastfeeding on Facebook and whether that was something that was going to be content moderated and forbidden or not, whether that was nakedness or not, and that escalated into research and big articles and news about the content moderation teams at Facebook and other social networks. Anyhow, and people, whether they were being offended about women breastfeeding or not, or were women's breasts or not. And of course, I saw a woman breastfeeding in one of the old paintings. So in a museum shown to a lot of people visiting every day, that's okay. And then there's another painting in the same room as the Mona Lisa with I don't even know who it was anyway. It's just like there was breasts. The woman had breasts and shown like as an open breast. And this dude was taking a photo, which I was both offended, not offended. I thought it was ridiculous, but kind of funny because, you know, he made it like as if he was grabbing the woman's breasts and had his friend take a picture. And this gentleman was an older man. I mean, go figure where he's from. I don't know. But they were laughing. And it's a ridiculous conceit. It's kind of stupid and very childish to do that. And at the same time, it's kind of fun to be playing around with things that, on the other hand, some people take very seriously. And that's, you could also make the argument that it might be sexist and there might be a sexist kind of overtone to what he was doing. And you'd probably be right. If not probably, you'd be entirely right. And you'd be right to be offended by it. And at the same time, there's one side that just looked like it was whimsical fun. And the juxtaposition being in the same room right next to the Mona Lisa where people are queuing again to be right next to it. And of course, as I do, I took pictures of people taking pictures of it on the side. And I'll have more to comment. I need to talk to somebody about the art and the Mona Lisa because I read some of the stuff, but I don't know anything about it. I don't know why it's so... I mean, I know why. A little bit of the reasons, the sfumato, the paintings, the mystique around it. But the fact that he didn't finish it during his lifetime and carried it around with him... I'm sure there's stuff about it, and there's a big Leonardo da Vinci exhibit at the moment going on at the Louvre, but I think it's
absolutely packed and very difficult to get in. They've been sold out of tickets since it started in October, so I'll see whether I get around to doing that or not. But I was thinking of the funny thought about Leonardo da Vinci carrying this painting around and going like, oh God, how am I going to finish it? This thing's like such a problem for me. I keep carrying it around. I mean, I wonder how obsessed he was with it, or whether it was just like, oh yeah, that piece of junk, I just like started it years ago. I still can't figure out how I'm going to finish it. I'm not happy with it, until François Premier, the first, the king, buys it from him. He's like, oh yeah, please just take it off my hands. And now it is the most celebrated, one of the most celebrated paintings in the world that fills this entire room and much of this museum. And I can't help but think, because I thought the same thing, that there's a lot of people going like, really? Is this it? Is this why I came all the way here? Can't we just go to a cafe and have some coffee and look at people? Although looking at people is what I'm doing at the museum as well. So I'm in the room 702, David's room. David, Jean-Louis David? No, pas Jean-Louis, Jean-Philippe, je sais pas. Bon, it's famous French painter. I started recording my podcast and started recording this visit in French as well. So I'm making French comments, some of them the same and not the same, mixing up words. It's kind of weird because I'm exploring whether I want to be publishing episodes in French as well, because I'm living in Paris now. So it might make sense to be looking at doing that in French. And you know, the thought I might have mentioned about the gods are naked. It's not only the gods, it's like scenes of antiquity. And I noticed this dude. So there's the giant painting of the crowning of Napoleon. And then right next to it, like on both sides, there are big, 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 big paintings of people naked with swords and helmets. And I went closer, and it's actually Leonidas of Sparta at Thermopylae before they're about to make their last stand. So basically, it's the scene is 300, I think. I'm pretty sure. That's the last stand of Sparta at the pass to protect themselves from the Persians. So I did. So still this idea of like, those guys are getting ready for war. They have helmets and swords and spears and some just vague cloths. But generally speaking, they're otherwise naked. There are soldiers in the background. They seem to have a little bit more armor than all the people in the forefront. Like, why are these people fighting naked? In the movie, they were not naked, even though it has a different artistic style. The movie 300. So, yeah, there's a painting of the movie 300, except they're all naked. I know this might seem very childish of me to mention those kinds of things, but I don't know. Yes, it is very childish playing around, I guess, and laughing and still feeling self-conscious about holding a big mic in the middle of the museum and talking. And I have no idea how this is going to turn out. So, here's the other funny thing is that there's two scenes of people fighting and being naked right in the middle. And in the middle of those two, the gigantic scene of the crowning of Napoleon and 1804 at Notre Dame, and it's very serious, and everybody is very, very dressed up event, as opposed to the Spartan Wars that are naked casual sword in hand thing. And I mean an actual sword. So I thought I'd do another little snippet in the room 700 de la Croix, and several of the students of David, which is next to where I was before. Except that I don't know what order I'm going to publish this, but anyway. So looking at the famous painting of Delacroix, The Liberty Guiding the People, which I was just wondering and realizing I didn't really know the painting. I mean, I know that I've seen it before, but I've never seen the actual painting, and I've never really thought much about it. And noticing that I thought, well, wait a minute, this is 19th century. I was like, oh yeah, this is 19th century. 1830. Okay, wait, which revolution is that? It's not 1789, which is the famous French Revolution. I mean, they're all famous. And thinking about this in the context of... the first thing that came to mind... Sorry, mixing things up a little bit. I thought about a role-playing game that's coming out, that I participated in the crowdfunding campaign, called Red Carnations on a Black Grave, if I remember correctly. Unless it's Black Carnation on a Red Grave. I'm not sure. I'll have to check it out. And this role-playing game is meant to be played during the events of La Commune de Paris, the Commune of Paris in 1871. I just double-checked the dates because I was suddenly thinking that I thought the Delacroix painting was the same time when Paris insurrected and like rebelled against the government and tried to make their own separate commune based on freedom and a lot of equality. And this role-playing game, I listened to a really great episode of She's a Super Geek. She's a Super Geek is a podcast I listen to from time to time that I really like. It features female women as GM, basically, as game mastering role-playing games. And so they test a large panel of different tabletop role-playing games and record themselves playing. And it's always a female game master. And the game was developed, the Red Carnations on a Black Grave. I think it's, it must be. I mean, they're not Black Carnations on a Red Grave. No, it must be a Red Carnation. Red Carnation makes a lot more sense because it was a symbol at the time, I think. I'll have to double check. Anyway, I'm looking forward to having and playing that game. And this is something that I looked at. And I was suddenly thinking about, this is the Third Revolution, because then I looked it up, and this was 1830, and it's the Three Glorious Days of Revolution, where they abolished a whole king. And this is a day after the second day of marches against the pension, new pension plan from the government here in France. And we have, I mean, it's a country that has a long-standing history of rebelling against authority. And while at the moment it's not as bloody as it was in the 19th century, it is getting pretty bloody at the moment. And I to be honest, this is kind of embarrassing because I support the strikes, but I'm not working at the moment. I mean, I'm contracting. I'm in between contracts. I'm freelancing. I could have gone to the march. I just completely zapped it. I didn't realize because I was just not plugged into the news. And I went Christmas shopping around my neighborhood, did not realize anything was going on. And I got back and I talked to my brother briefly and I read into the news and I realized it was already the end of the march and they were coming up to Place de la Nation and tear gas was already being thrown in, even though the rest of the march hadn't arrived and it was mostly seemed to be peaceful. So it seemed to be a dissuasive measure to make sure that nobody stayed stuck around as they arrived, even though most of the other images I've seen, I mean, go figure, there might have been incidents, but generally speaking, people seem to be in good spirits and dancing and marching, and the rest of the world doesn't seem to be understanding. And I've read enough to know that I support the whole striking movement, and because it's been framed up from a communication standpoint, I think I've talked about this a little bit in another recording I did yesterday, so I'm not going to go all at length about it. I was just, my main point, I'm not going to talk about the pension plan. My main point being that France has a long history of rebelling against authority. And it's interesting how it's being celebrated here. I have a very violent painting, Liberty is Marianne, and people with guns standing on top of a bunch of corpses. We have a pretty bloody history of rebelling against authority. And there's a lot of violent scenes going on now. Police violence is extremely strong at the moment, or it seems to be, according to some news. And there's, you know, I don't know. My point is, it's pretty bloody, and I wonder if it's going to get any more serious than it is already, even though it doesn't seem like it's going to go as serious as this, because people seem content with taking some photos here and there. So another snippet from room 705. I'm in the La Galerie Apollon. Apollo Gallery with all the jewels from past monarchs of France. And it's a very intricate gallery. It's probably original, as in all the stuff that used to be there was left there in terms of decorations, statues, environment. And so in the middle, there's these, glass cases. That's what I'm looking for. I said it before, I'm having so much trouble with my words. It's ridiculous between French and English and translating, going back and forth. This is cute. Tiny little bowls, sculpted out of fine stone and gems. Semi-precious gems and gems. So, all right, so everybody's taking photos of the whole place. Everybody's like around the glass cases looking at the very fine jewels. I heard somebody was visiting and must have been working here comment on how the cases were spread out and displayed differently than whenever he last looked at them. So they were just commenting on the lighting, the way they were presented, the way they were spread out, which is very interesting. As I said, I mentioned before how I find the thinking how you lay out a museum for people is fascinating. Somebody just fell. She's okay. She just slipped. I don't know how she fell. It's all flat. She slipped. Anyhow, I know I'm talking very softly. I think I am anyway. Softly for me. I hope it works, but
I feel like I unlocked an achievement, a side quest of the Louvre Museum, just because, and this is silly, but I was looking up at the ceiling, looking up where most people aren't really looking, and I noticed that towards the ceiling on the top, there are every month of the year that's sprayed out, and there's like a round painting that is expressing a scene from that year, and in between those there are the 12 signs of the zodiac where the sculpture that is representing it, which I thought was kind of cool. So we have March with people that are planting fields and pruning trees in a field, I suppose, and Aries just after that. And we have a statue of maybe the god, and then a little cherub or a kid with a ram, for example. So I was looking at the Cancer one because I'm Cancer. And on the sides of the walls, we have famous artists and kings. So I'm just looking at a painting of Louis XIV, Louis XIV. So yeah, that's room 705, Gallery Apollo. So look up to the ceiling if ever you visit this one. It's kind of interesting. Not that they... jewels are not interesting, but also like the intricate bowls made of jade and other precious gems. Those kinds of sculptures I find fascinating. So I walked up to the second floor of the Richelieu wing. It's super quiet. There's nobody around. I can only hope that I'm just going to move to another room because it's just way too quiet. There's very few people around. Okay, there's machinery. There's like this thing blowing air. It's funny because there's like less people, less noise, I feel like I'm more conscious about speaking. Here's a little corner. I can feel I can speak here. So I just browse and walk quickly through the Sully wing, or at least the first floor of the Sully wing, second floor in, if you're American. And walked all the way up from a small staircase that looked like a service stairway, because I wanted to go see, there's more French paintings, but there's the Nordics, so I wanted to check out if there are any Dutch paintings or like that, and I thought it'd be interesting, and as I suspected, there's a lot of very few people. Here's another thing I noticed from, I just saw one again, and I've been thinking about it several times, I've been noticing from a play perspective that there's a guide, there's an audio guide system that people have that I don't know if it's provided by the museum or provided by tour groups. I think it might be the museum because there's a lot of people with it. They have a Nintendo console, 3DS, a handheld console, and they have earbuds, and they're two-screening something of their visit. So I just want to now check out if Nintendo has a partnership with the Louvre or who has a partnership with the Louvre to be having visits and guided visits through a Nintendo DS. And why is it because of those two screens? Like, why use a video game console for a museum visit? It seems to be smart, but yeah, so I just want to find out more about this. So I just went through a few religious scenes, very large paintings, and now I'm looking at what's it called, fruits, de nature morte. I can't remember what it was called in English. It was blanking right now. I'm looking at a bowl of cherries and a half-cut melon. Oh, and some prunes. Yeah, prunes. So this French, more French paintings. And then I want to go check out the... I see Nordics. I think they're Nordics, as in like Dutch. And I don't know whether it's Dutch, German. I'm not sure. There's just like one little piece of a... one painting that I think is kind of famous that I wanted to check out. And also just, I don't know, randomly wandering around, really. So in my last section, I was saying that on the second floor of the Sully Room, looking for the Nordic painters, like Northern European paintings, and actually that wing is closed for renovation. So I found myself in another section, just like trying to get back to a general visit that is still empty, but fascinating. And I'm in a room with empty frames. It's a frame gallery. The Louvre apparently keeps 3,000 frames of every possible time period and styles and to exhibit paintings, basically. What else do they say about it? Yeah, they're formidable reserve for all the framings to come. So ancient historic frames, disaffected one, reframes, empty frames that they bought. So this gallery here is just to talk about the fact that curation of the museum includes keeping frames and looking at what kinds of frames do they want to put the paintings in, which I can only imagine. I'm not even imagining how big a job it is. There's still very few people around. I was lost for a second. I was like confused. Just like, you know, there's all the room numbers I keep referring to. I'm in room 904 on the Sully Wing. I don't know how much of the museum I'll have seen because, but guess what? Star Wars is coming out here today, and I decided I'm doing the Louvre and Star Wars today, so I'm going to see Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker later. Because I didn't really have... I'm going with my nieces this weekend, but anyway, back to the main point. The main point is I discovered that there's a room... I didn't realize this whole floor has more French paintings, and including Impressionists. So there's Pissarro and Monet and Sisley and... what else do we got? Renoir. This is interesting because a lot of those paintings are in the Musée d'Orsay, and I really love that museum. I want to go back. Like, if I take a membership, I'll hesitate strongly between the Louvre and the Musée d'Orsay, but I'll take the Musée d'Orsay first. However, I didn't know that there was a gallery of Impressionists in 19th century paintings, 19th to 20th century paintings in the Louvre, and that it's pretty empty. Because I felt I should do a last recording before I go. I'm about to go and head over to the Max Linder Panorama Cinema to go watch Star Wars, the new Star Wars, coming out today. I think it's coming out literally a couple of days before the US because the movie releases are on Wednesday. So I thought I should do a last update. I was getting lost a little bit, and it's been 4 hours in the museum. It's absolutely, of course, not enough to do the Louvre. And I don't even know that I did justice to whatever I visited, to what I visited, not whatever. But anyway, I was about to hesitate doubling back after trying to see the Nordic paintings, finding another way to see them, but then like just I saw some of the decorative arts and thinking, should I backtrack to go see the Venus of Milo? I don't know if it has another name in English, La Venus de Milo, another very famous antique sculpture. I believe it's antique. I don't know how this echo is going to work. Now I'm back at the ground floor, and I thought I'd have a quick look at the French sculptures before I leave, and there's wings that are... covered but open, like open outs. I mean, it used to be an open area that has been covered by a glass dome, but it's closed. It looks gorgeous though. And there's a sign with different color codes of different wings close at different days of the week. It's kind of interesting and weird. And yeah, I just wanted to wrap things up essentially while I look at a few sculptures before I head down to grab a bite to eat. So it's already 3 p.m. So I was here from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. and I was able to do most of one wing and a little bit of another wing. That is the, you know, definitely wandering around, not paying attention. Ooh, there's another beautiful sculpture wing that is open. And there's the Petite Galerie. Okay, I don't know. I'm not commenting in any kind of fashionable or knowledgeable or in a knowledgeable fashion. Nicolas Coustou, a hunter holding a ram, a deer, I believe. Yes, a deer. So he's got clothes on. All right. I don't know why I'm fixating on naked statues. And then there's one with a boar over there. This is pretty cool. It's very quiet as well. It's high ceilings. It's like indoor, outdoor, and it's a beautiful day. That's cool. This has been a fantastic experience. I think, I mean, I talked a couple of times about getting the membership. I think just for the 2020, I think the membership is paid for if you go 4 or 5 times, basically. So 4 or 5 times in a year. And 4 or 5 times is probably what you need to do the museum justice. Sounds like a good plan of a project, of a little side quest for 2020 to be exploring the Louvre and learning a little bit more about art history and doing it in different ways. Like this one is a little bit less serious and less knowledgeable. I have a bit of an answer on the... I took an escalator hesitating to go back to the Venus of Milo, and then it turned out I was right behind 2 people holding the Nintendo 3DS console, and now I understand a little bit more the interactive kind of side of things. So they have... One screen is with the map, and it shows where you are on the map, and the other screen shows what there is to see there. So you have a full, like, full-on interactive video. You can make, you know, you could gamify your visit to the Louvre. I wouldn't be surprised if there is such a thing, because I know that there's visits, set visits, which I might try next time, as in they recommend you do this and this and this within X amount of time. So that's learning for another time. It's daunting and it's, what's the word? Definitely refreshing, definitely inspiring. It's giving a lot of food for thought. Humbled is the other word I'm looking for. Humbled. It's just the amount of work that goes into building this, the amount of work that went into crafting
painting, sculpting each one of the pieces that are collected here, the amount of history, the amount of places it reaches, the amount of people that are here from all around the world visiting it, and all the glory of it, I don't know, however we do that today. And I feel lucky. As cramming in Star Wars in the same day is almost one side of not doing it justice, but I like the contrast. And I might have talked about contrast in some other episodes, I can't remember. But I love the contrast of saying, okay, I'm spending half my day at the Louvre and another half is going to be going to Star Wars. This dude, like, sculpted, looks like he's carrying a guitar. It's not a guitar. It's not a broom either, which it could be. Anyway, I think that's going to be it for now. And I'll be adding some thoughts and weave them in. And I'm still experimenting with this recording format. I'm not sure how it's going to work out. But, it's been a fantastic visit to the Louvre on the 18th of December, 2019. Yeah, thanks. Bye.